Between within point two and point two.
Right. In a way, point two says the same thing, but it says it at a slightly more subtle level, because it's a transition from the gross to the subtle. So you're meditating at this point. You're having the idea of an object as only experience. So you're looking at your experience as we did at the beginning, and taking, for instance, a sensation, and reflecting. This is just experience. But it's still only an idea. You've got to do it. And it's a step on the way. But don't think that you've got there.
So theory and practice, a metaphor of both theory and practice that's still living.
Yes, yeah.
Instead of just theory.
Is that to do with the others, or is that some other kind of... No, this is beyond the other.
What is suffering? Suffering arises from craving. What we're saying is that the freedom from craving, the freedom from the delusive grasping that gives rise to craving, is blissful. It's not that you just disappear into an anesthetized dullness, as it were. It's not that when you remove suffering, you're left with just, you know, a cool kind of absence. What's left is blissful. Because there's no conflict. You know, conflict arises from duality. There's no sense of loss, no sense of absence, no sense of threat, no sense of insecurity.
So features of resolutions.
But you could say that, yeah. Yeah. Which is experienced as an intense happiness and joy in so far as we can talk about it at all. Mm. So clearly what's been done is it's been given some positive content. It really is inconceivable, that's what it says. But blissful at least is a good metaphor for what's being experienced at that stage. That's there, that's just the natural state of things.
So this is Bhaswabandhu's experience of it.
Well, in a way, we don't know.
Well, but because we have, I mean, we possibly, well, at least I don't have an idea of that.
So, facing things, I guess, we're talking about
in somebody's experience, if you have a Bhaswabandhu, you might have someone knows somebody in there to tell us.
Presumably.
Well, some schools of Buddhism, like some kind of Zen, which at least are presented, I don't know enough about them, but at least seem to present it in a way of reaching out straight to the second level of the going straight for the pramaya in a way. More emphasis on that rather than precept.
This is the so-called sudden gradual debate.
Yeah.
To really give a decent answer to that, I'd have to do quite a bit of exposition. But I think to some extent it's a quite artificial sort of problem. But the reality is that you have to practice for a long time to have a sudden experience. But in a sense, what's been got at with the sudden idea is that there's an absolute discontinuity between the one and the other. So I think that it's a problem in language more than anything. You can... It seems to me that spiritual life is founded upon an essential duality, which is the idea of yourself now and the idea of how you want to be. So the whole of spiritual life and the whole of spiritual discussion of spiritual life is about how you get from one to the other. So if you're distinguishing between those two things, you as you are now and you as you want to be, you can emphasize either the connection between the two, the gradual movement from the one to the other, or you can emphasize the absolute difference between the two. Do you see what I mean? So the gradual schools emphasize the connection between the two and the steps that need to be taken to move from one to the other. Southern schools emphasise the absolute discontinuity between the two and the sudden leap that needs to be made from the one to the other. But the reality is, and most Southern schoolists who are willing to descend into dualistic dialogue at all acknowledge that there's a lot of work to be done to get to the Southern experience.
I guess
that's my view of it anyway.
I guess in one way the gradual approach can sometimes seem like it's going to take forever.
Yeah.
Whereas Southern school seems to emphasize that it's actually available right now.
Yeah. I think it's that I've come to think that recognizing the fundamental metaphor upon which spiritual life is based is quite usefully liberating. Perhaps this is a bit sort of the subtle attack. You can take so literally the idea that here's you and there's the Buddha. And you can get caught up in all the kind of metaphoricalizings that arise from that. And it's very useful to then look at things from another point of view. So yes, you can sometimes feel that it's such a long way away that you're never going to get there, so it's quite good to recognise that it's there all the time, actually. Experience is just there. All you need to do is just recognise it as for what it is. But then, you know, you can get so frustrated because all the time you're trying to or you can think, oh gosh, yeah, it's just experience. Whatever I am, because you thought it. So then you probably need to sort of go back to thinking, oh, I just need to do some steady effort and not worry too much about that. And I think it's a very useful sort of dialectic when you see that the essential metaphor upon which spiritual life is founded, and then you see the problems that arise from attaching to one particular way of discussing that metaphor rather than another. And you'll probably find there's a natural dialectic within your own spiritual life and within the life of a movement, for instance, such as our own. So that one thing gets emphasized and, you know, everybody piles in on top of that. And suddenly there's a sort of reaction if something else gets emphasized. And so you have a more mature sort of spiritual community in which there's a broader range of discourse. But I think in your own spiritual life you'll find that there's a dialectic between those, that all those different dichotomies. You know, is the Buddha inside you or outside you? Do you need to move yourself to the Buddha or do you need to move the Buddha to you? I discussed this at the convention. You know, you can talk about the movement in terms of going beyond yourself to the Buddha, or of surrendering yourself to the Buddha, as it were. Or you can talk about the Buddha as to be discovered somehow inside you, or the Buddha as emerging from within you. They're just words, really, just metaphors, which we have to use because we're down here. Yeah. So I tend to think of these kind of arguments that you get in Buddhist tradition as really belonging to the natural tensions that arise from our necessity for choosing a particular view to look from. If it is a view, it will automatically switch to its opposite sooner or later. You see what I mean? And that's where the subtle level takes over from the gross. Because the gross level, you know, you take the idea of sudden enlightenment and you get terribly literal about it and you think you've got it, when all you've got is the idea. Or that, you know, you can do it with the other, that that there's a development to take place, and you lose sight of that, but actually what you're trying to develop towards is already there in you. Anyway, that's a rather large subject. Put it go. So there you are. That's the Yogacara. Make of it what you like.